That's hooey in applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, la, and la. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Oh, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shake in NFL. In NFL and Dave. Damn a shake.
Football fans, your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 20 of the Dave Damashek football program. And listen, I'm over the moon because a fortnight from today, 14 days, for those of you who don't know what a fortnight is, we shall be watching the New Orleans Saints go into Lambeau Field to play the world champion Green Bay Packers in the kickoff of games that matter. Regular season football. Rank, it's almost here, fella.
Boss, I am so happy for
Stop
this
with
to
the
be.
Boss, though.
Listen, it's true, though.
What? That I'm your boss?
You are.
All right.
People know. So and that's why I always say thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure
I'm
to
excited.
See you once
what do you,
again.
But what do you mean these games don't count? Tell Todd Haley that these games don't count.
Enough with that. Come on. Where's the self-esteem, fella? You know? It's sad already. Actually, this is the time of year where guys start, getting exposed. And Todd Haley, second time in a year, he can't shake a guy's hand because he doesn't like it when people score points against his team. Grow up, Haley.
Relax. Go to a Lil Wayne concert. Relax. Do what you got
to
do.
Yeah, what is the story with that? He took a day off to go and do that. Very strange. Yeah. Well, like I say, it's episode number 20, and we're going to be talking with Jamie Dukes from the NFL Network. I've loved his work for quite some time now. Going to talk to him. You know, he's a Florida State Seminole grad, and so I want to talk to him about they're highly ranked this year, and I want to hear what he has to say about the Canes and that scandal down there. Do you
I'm
think
excited.
He wishes for them to get the death penalty?
Oh, not Jamie. He's too nice a guy. Like, listen, I would never say this to Jamie Dukes' face, but I think he's the nicest guy on the network.
Is that true?
Yes.
Isn't that true?
Fran Charles is great, too.
Fran Charles is very nice.
I mean, there's everybody's
great. Aren't you slighting other people, though, by pointing out?
I don't think so.
Now I feel like you're obliged for your own, you know, for your own good standing
everybody,
here.
Everybody, listen, we talk winners and losers. Teams are better than the others. That
All
doesn't
right.
mean that some people
Who
are
at
bad.
The network don't you like?
I like everybody.
Go ahead.
But Jamie Dukes
is
the number one.
Who's your least favorite personality on the NFL Network?
Necktie Milner.
Former producer and now interim producer Necktie Dye behind the glass right now. Number 20. Let's do it. We do. We start each episode by talking about which player wore that number best. Number 20, easy one here, Barry Sanders.
Absolutely.
Should be the all-time leading running back, except that he lost the will. As Gale Sayers told us when we saw him in Canton, he said that that's the runner who he feels the closest kinship with. In,
right.
in terms of running style, that is his doppelganger. And he said to Barry Sanders, why didn't you get the record? He said, I got to tell you, Gale, I just lost my passion for it. Interesting.
And Bobby Ross, the coach of the Lions at the time.
Imagine being so unlikable that it's like, yeah, I know I could go down as the all-time guy, but I don't want to be around you.
I can't hang out with this guy.
Yeah, I don't want to be around Bobby Ross any longer. Other noteworthy guys, a number 20 from the Detroit Lions, who we talk about a lot as one of the more underrated or more forgotten guys in NFL history, the great Billy Sims, the Oklahoma product. And speaking of Oklahoma, that reminds me, tomorrow we're going to be bringing in our old pal, the Blue Horseshoe, from AccuScore,
Blue Horseshoe.
Yeah, the AccuScore. See, they generate 10,000 simulations of every game, and they're evil computers, but they're ingenious with their ability to forecast what's going to happen on all fronts in terms of what teams are going to be good, what individuals are going to have good seasons. So you want to tune in for if you want to hear who AccuScore, and more importantly, who Damashek thinks is going to be good in each division. We're going to do a proper breakdown of who's going to make the playoffs. And you know, for fantasy fans as well, those evil computers do nice work. And the shoe is an Oklahoma fan. He's an advocate. That's what reminded me to say that.
Can I say one thing about Billy Sims?
You don't have to ask if you
boss,
can
say
something.
Boss, I don't want to overstep my bounds here.
Let me get out of your way. Go ahead. Take over.
Billy Sims wore number 20 for the Lions very well. Why did Barry Sanders have to come up and take number 20? It wasn't. I don't think he wore that number at Oklahoma State. Why? Well, what was you couldn't pick 21?
Right. He was 21.
Yeah, you could. I mean, maybe somebody was wearing it, but you're like, oh, you know, I don't want to take. Or was it a rivalry thing? And he said, I'm going to show the Sooner who the best 20 is.
Isn't that an interesting thought?
We got to track down Barry Sanders sometime and get to the bottom of this.
See, you interrupted me to bring that point up. It makes me think that we need to do another episode of what we did a couple weeks ago, the Adam Rank podcast show. Is that what it was called?
The Adam Rank Gridiron Podcast for Kids.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
All right, maybe we'll get back to that. By the way, you can listen to that show, the show within a show, and the show you're listening to right now. My brain's getting confused, but you can listen to them all on iTunes. Go ahead and subscribe there. Check out the Damashek. We appreciate you subscribing and commenting and all that and all that jazz. And of course, NFL.com. You can check out the great Adam Rank's Pick Six segments, among other things. There, you can read his pages, and I believe the Damashek blog, which I've been talking about for 2 weeks now, is going to be up at some point. I don't know when, though.
This is almost as enthralling as the NFL lockout coverage, where you're on pins and needles, like so many false starts, and we're close. Nope. We're close. Nope. I can't wait.
Yes. The Czech Republic has demanded a blog, and they shall soon be getting one. And one of the things that's going to be up there is you know, this Cam Newton thing. You know, a lot of noise being made about this Jerry Richardson story that he told Cam Newton, the owner, of course, of Carolina. He told him, don't get a tattoo while you're a Panther. A lot of noise being made about this, and, you know, people getting up on Mount Pius that, I
he knows Jeremy Shockey plays on that team, right?
That's the first question, but I get where Richardson's coming from. I don't want to ascend up to Mount Pius. I'm all in favor. Listen, get your tats however you want them. I actually have questions about guys like Troy Polamalu, that he wants his hair that long because it does create the potential for injury. Remember when Ricky Williams used to have the long hair out of the back and then somebody tackled him by it and he complained after the game? How dare they tackle me by my hair? Listen, I think you're fast, Ricky, and they're reaching out to grab anything on you, and you're the one whose hair is dangling out of the back of his helmet. You can't really cry about that. but as long as it doesn't create a detriment out on the field, I don't see the problem. Except with Cam Newton, that in puritanical 21st century America, it does create a repellent in terms of marketing. And Cam Newton had a lot of questions about him, of course, coming out of Auburn. Maybe it's for the best for him to cut as clean a clean cut a figure as possible, so that he is embraced and no one has, you know, give the media nothing to latch on to. I think there's a certain that sort of seems sensible.
And I don't like the hypocrisy, because Steve Smith has tattoos. Jeremy Shockey, as I mentioned, has tattoos. But it's his team. He can set the dress code.
Yes,
and everybody goes, oh, his First Amendment right. And listen, the government cannot tell him to not have a tattoo.
I agree. That's what his right as the owner, but that doesn't make it right. You understand?
Exactly.
It doesn't make it right because it is the owner's right to do
it. But he can do
it. In this case, it seems like good advice to a guy who has some question marks about his character and everything else. As I say, Puritans, people up on Mount Pius, look at that and say, he's a bad kid. Look, he's got tattoos and he's got law, you know, look, he's got dreads and everything else. So that's the way society operates. I don't know if Jerry Richardson is that old school kind of guy. Like, I don't like these newfangled kids coming in here with all their tats and all that jazz.
But there's guys already on the team, as we said.
I mean,
if he wants to institute a new policy that says we're not going to draft guys or do anything like that with visible tattoos, his talent pool is going to shrink a lot. And
can I tell you something? My main thing is with this is we're 2 weeks out from football. Isn't there something better to talk about? Why do we just talk for 5 minutes about that hooey and applesauce when we can be talking about gridiron? You know,
yes.
I want to talk about football.
X's talking and ball. O's.
Talking ball is what I want to do. And speaking of that, I want to talk about the Indianapolis Colts. That's what I want to get Duke's opinion on. Is as a player, do you like the idea of Peyton Manning? I know they go out. Of course, the big story of the week is they go out and get Kerry Collins. And but a lot of people are still saying Tony Dungy among them. Oh, we still think Peyton Manning's going to be in there. Why? Because it's important to him to maintain his Lou Gehrig streak. He wants to keep the consecutive game streak alive. And on some level, it's great because we have the Willis Reeds of the world who come off the bench and inspire their team to victory. I thought it was great when Phil Rivers in the AFC title game played on a bum knee while his teammate LaDainian Tomlinson saw fit to sit out. But they're the two sides of that coin. When you force yourself into the lineup because you want to be in there, and it can be detrimental to your team. I always remember, this is a semi-obscure reference, but John Smiley, the Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher before Game 7 right. of the NLCS against the upstart Atlanta Braves in 91, was the ace of the staff that season, and had a bum arm going into the game. And skipper Jimmy Leland said, "Are you good to go? Are you sure you're good to go? Because I don't want to put you out there if it's gonna hurt the team." He said, "I'm good to go, Skip. I want the ball. I want the ball." And then he went out there and got tagged in the first inning. They went down 4-0 and went down 3-0 and couldn't come back from it. And that was that. And then after the game, he said, "Yeah, my arm wasn't right." Well, then why were you out there? Don't go in if you're gonna stink it up and you know it. That's no help to anybody. So I want to talk to Dukes about whether or not he thinks it's a good idea for, I mean, do we want 70, if you're a Colts fan, do you want a 75% Peyton Manning out on the field versus Kerry Collins?
Yeah, but we harangue LaDainian Tomlinson
I'm conflicted, I'm saying.
I'm not 80, you know, he's 80% or whatever he was.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, but we'll talk about that in just a second here, but let's wrap up the number 20s. Billy Sims. Neck tie dye. Are you now familiar with who Rocky Blyer is? Because he wore number 20. Do you know who he is?
The Rock?
Yeah, The Rock. That's who we're talking about. Yeah, so obviously you have become, yes, interim producer, neck tie dye in here, who took over for Tie Dye Milner a little while ago. Now, you didn't know when we asked you about a month or so ago who Rocky Blyer was. I was outraged to learn that you had no idea, and you're not alone. It's not just, I'm not just targeting you. It's remarkable to me that people under 30 who claim to be football fans don't know who Rocky Blyer is. Do you now know who he is?
I haven't done my homework.
But I told you who he is. Who is he? I've told you. It's not, you didn't have a homework. I told you the answer. Who is he?
He's like, oh, Bob Urich played him in his movie.
You have no answer.
I was even trying to write that down for him, and I still, he couldn't even comprehend that.
Do you know what team he played for?
Your legendary Steelers, of course.
Right, and what position did he play?
He was a menacing fullback, wasn't he?
All right, good. All right, so that's
what number
bad.
Did he wear?
Let's go with 37.
Oh, my goodness.
Not close?
Do you know what episode the show is?
Was it further off than my AC Green wearing number 17?
I don't know how you could get much more off than what you just did there. Please. Please.
That beat Rodney Dangerfield's 4 in the movie Back to School.
I don't remember the 4.
No, because he had that convoluted economic question during his oral final. And he goes, "What's the answer?" And he's like, 4? Yes.
Wow. That was a stunning example of kids.
The episode number.
Kids.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's why they call it dope. All right. So show yourself the door, neck tie dye. That was an embarrassment. That was an outrage. Former Pittsburgh Penguins defenseman Mo Mantha. He might be the worst number 20 ever. Mike Schmidt.
Oh, great one.
Frank Robinson. Don Sutton. Lou Brock. Luke Robitaille.
Luke.
Lucky Luke.
I think people my age, the definitive L.A. King. We actually had this. Discussion. In our video room there about the Kings and everything. Some people thought it was Gretzky. They go, no, Luke Robitaille was the one true king.
Yeah. Well, he came in his rookie season and made all sorts of hay with the first round draft pick, Jimmy Carson, mm-hmm. who got dealt up to Edmonton. And
who also wore 20.
Jimmy Carson wore number 20.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
For the Kings.
Then how did Lucky Luke wind up with the number?
He switched after he left.
Did he? I know. That's an interesting tidbit there. I've kibitzed with Lucky Luke on a couple of occasions. Delightful fella.
And when he won the Stanley Cup with the Red Wings, he brought the cup to L.A. Orange County, more specifically. He brought it down to Seal Beach.
I don't like that move. I've spoken out against that before. I think it shows self-esteem issues when you're a fan who goes out to see it because you've never, because your team hasn't won one. Like when Raymond Bourque brought the cup back to Boston and thousands of people turned out to cheer.
They had a parade for it.
That's ridiculous.
We didn't have a parade for it.
Where's your self-esteem? You don't go look at the state. You're not supposed to touch the Stanley Cup if you haven't won it as a player. If you're a fan, you don't go out and see until your team wins it. You don't go cheer for Raymond Bourque winning it with the Colorado Avalanche. Fat and double fat. But you know who I feel bad for?
What's wrong with you?
Today, here's what I say. And by the way, so we'll give it to Barry Sanders. He's the clear-cut best number 20. Although Mike Schmidt does push him a little bit.
Lou Brock.
Wow. Come on.
He's good too.
But Mike Schmidt is the best third baseman of all time, right? Is he Mike Schmidt top,
Lou Brock,
top three?
But Lou Brock, they had the stolen base record.
All right. Well, stuff doesn't compare to Mike Schmidt in overall deeds,
it
I would
doesn't?
Say. I don't think so. And as you've mentioned before, it's my show, so I win.
All right,
no.
Boss.
All right. I think what we should do, you know, on occasion at least, we talk about that Indianapolis situation, the quarterback situation, and especially in the month of August right now, this is time when guys are getting embarrassed. Some guys are being exposed as not worthy of making an NFL roster. There's a lot of guys right now who are deserving of a pity party. And I think we should throw a pity party, and we can maybe do it every week during the season.
I like it.
We'll see. Today, I want to throw a pity party, though, for Curtis Painter. I feel bad for this character.
Why?
Well, listen, he's the backup. Everybody always talks about that they could, if Peyton Manning went away, then they wouldn't win a game. And that's because of who the backup is. And right now it's Curtis Painter. And as if that's not an embarrassment enough, that everybody knows that if Peyton Manning can't play, that, and he probably knows, we are going to be in trouble if I have to play. Now they go and they show the world that the organization has absolutely no faith in him either, that they go out and they get a retired old man who's never looked at your team's playbook. Yeah, he's better than you. Yeah, we know you've been around for a while, but listen, come on, we're not really going to play you. So I say this, let's give a pity party for old Curtis Painter there, number 7.
Who they got inside, Mike Pagel?
I think that's who
that's
it was.
That's who it was?
Yeah, yeah, Art Schleister.
He's like the backup quarterback from, do you remember the old Helen Hunt movie, Quarterback Princess?
No, I don't.
Oh, Helen Hunt she played a female quarterback of this high school team.
Wow, how'd I miss this
one? And the second.
Is this a teenage Helen Hunt when she was back making, what was it called, Mystery Island or whatever? Mountain?
Yeah, way back. I mean, this is deep. And she played, and they had this incompetent quarterback who was the backup to the star, who just couldn't play. He just couldn't even tie his shoes. And then eventually they had to throw the woman in there to go play, and she won for the team, blah, blah, blah. You know, Lifetime movie probably now. But also, you know,
Kathy Ireland kicking field goals is the only time I can remember.
The other one.
Yeah.
Necessary Roughness.
That's right. Terrible movie.
Great
terrible.
Movie.
Terrible.
I think you're wrong there. What about, you know who I really feel sorry for?
Yeah, you really. That's something
I like.
Else.
I like
you know
terrible
else
movies.
I have to throw a pity party for is your wife, that you sit and watch those horrendous movies, and I'm sure you force her to sit there and watch them with you.
She enjoys Con Air as much as anybody.
Well, I listen, you're
Which
not going to get any argument from me against Con Air, but I'm talking about the lousy pictures you like Unnecessary Roughness. No, and by the way, it's called Necessary Roughness.
Necessary Roughness.
Yeah, right.
The guy I really feel sorry for, Jim Sorgi. So many years, you know.
He's out from under that stink.
He was the backup for Peyton Manning for so many years, and now when it looks like the backup to Peyton Manning will finally get a chance to play, it's not him. And I've always been fascinated by Jim Sorgi's mother, and it's been hear me out. Because mothers always think that their son is better than the guy who is playing in
front
of them.
Not my mother. Oh, wait. Yeah,
not my mother either. So they're always like, you know, if my son was that. So I always imagined her, you know, out at games, maybe having a few scotches, hanging out. And she'd be at a playoff game, and she'd be hanging out.
She's having scotches?
She's at a Colts game, playoff game, having a scotch. Manning throws another interception. She's like, you know, if my kid was out there, we would be winning. Oh, I'm looking at you up there, Archie, sitting in your little box. I got to sit down here with the real fans, and my boy would win the game. I've had no idea what this woman is like, but I've carved this image at her, just throwing a scotch glass at the Manning box during a playoff game. I feel bad for her. I want to throw a pity party for her.
All right, done and done, and I hope she gets the help she needs, too. But yeah, that was my experience in life. People always say, oh, it must be, so, you know, you're, you know, old Mo Damashek and my old man, you know, they're ultra supportive of me. And people say, well, that must have fill you with a sense of confidence as you went out into the world. No, the opposite, because as soon as I found out, as soon as I became lucid about how the general public perceives me, which is not very positively, you know, when I went to third grade, you know, I didn't walk into the classroom and everybody like, whatever you do is great. You know, no, the opposite, you know, and that gives you a false sense. It confuses the brain. Only in those four walls was I a great person. In regular society, it ends up giving you a chip on your shoulder, making you have self-esteem issues.
I did the same thing. I lost my starting spot when I was a senior in high school in basketball, and I called my dad. I go, oh, you know, this kid Jeremy McKee was starting over me. I said, yeah, I lost my spot to Jeremy McKee. And my dad looks at me and goes, oh, Jeremy's pretty good. Good player.
Yeah, see, that's
like,
not
thanks.
Good. Yeah, that's a different, that's the other side of the coin. Yeah. Yeah, Mo Damashek. Well, you know, I watched you on the fantasy show on NFL Network there, that you were the best one. Why do they need all those other boys out there? Because you really know a lot of stuff and you're so entertaining. And then you're the best looking one too. And I'm like, well, Elliot Harrison's a pretty boy, isn't he? Oh no. I mean, he's not. He seemed like a nice boy, but I didn't like his hair. So anyway, all right, listen. Let's get, there he is on the other side of the glass. Let's get him in here. The great Jamie Dukes.
Dave. Dave.
Well, will you look at this, Captain Rank? We're really doing gangbusters work here with the bookings. Yes, I'm very excited to talk to this fella. Florida State product and longtime Atlanta Falcon. And now, of course, you see him on the NFL Network. Jamie Dukes, what's going down, Dukes?
What's happening, boys?
How are we?
Oh, wonderful. Another
Thanks
day
for coming
in paradise.
In.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You could have shaved, though.
You know what?
You could have.
You have
I
my
understand.
Apologies.
Okay. I'm just saying, I see on TV, all dapper, got the hair working, and now a podcast, and you just do that. Okay. I mean,
isn't it make,
it's your podcast.
Don't you think it makes me ruggedly handsome, though?
No, not necessarily, but in your own way, so what are we going
to
talk about
today? You don't want to be too pretty, because then it's intimidating to the women.
Like Fabiano, right?
Yeah. That's exactly who I was thinking about.
See, Adam and I, we've got that rugged look thing going.
Yeah? More, we're making a habit of not bringing anybody with hair in here. It's giving me some self-esteem of my luxurious man.
I like the coif, though, man. I really like that.
Thank you. I appreciate nice. That, Dukes. I appreciate it. All right, well, listen, let's talk some football here. And all like right. I mentioned, you are a Seminole. What are your thoughts about all that mess going on in Miami? Does you know, a lot of people are talking about Florida State being a top five team this year, a return to glory. Talk about, let's first of all, I guess, talk about the Bobby Bowden-less Seminoles and this new era going on there. Are you excited about the future, or are you more sort of heartbroken that Bobby Bowden exited the way he did?
No, well, I'm heartbroken about the whole scenario. Let's look at it historically. And first of all, you'll never be able to replace Bobby, but Jimbo's done a tremendous job. And the thing about it, Bobby didn't lose his edge. I think where people lose sight of what college football is all about is recruiting. That's what it's all about. And so what happened with unanimity is you got every team in the country, where Bobby was still there in those latter years, saying, you know, Bobby's not going to be there. Because here's how players think. Florida's paper is no better than Florida State's paper is no better than Michigan's paper. In other words, your degree.
Mm-hmm.
Quality institutions.
I thought you were talking about another kind of paper.
Well, they're that too, because it's all green. So that's the Miami. We'll talk about the Miami thing in a minute. But I thought we were talking about Florida State. But so the point to be made is that players go to the school for the guy who's at the helm.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you go. So when you hear all of a sudden, well, Bobby's not going to be there, and everybody is saying it, Auburn saying it, Florida saying it, Mississippi saying it, everybody saying it, then the kids have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Florida State started to struggle. Bobby's been running a tight ship and a machine the whole time, delegating as he should and as he has for the last 20 years. But the problem was Florida State's recruiting fell off, which means all of a sudden now Florida State's players started to fall off and their production started to fall off. That being said, now you're seeing where Florida State is coming back because they know that Jimbo is going to be the guy there and he's going to be there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to applaud Jimbo for how he handled it because Bobby didn't want to go. And I understand that. And when you love the game, you love the game. But the class and dignity in which he handled a very precarious situation, I thought he did a tremendous job in doing that.
What do you think, though? You think the Seminoles are worthy going into the season?
But they're on their way back. Again, it goes back to how many number one, how many top five recruiting seasons can you have? If you remember when we went on that 14-year or whatever it was run where we finished in the top five or some whatever that, or never lost a bowl game or something like that. The whole point was we were having recruiting class at the recruiting class at the recruiting class. So now Jimbo's been able to piece together two consecutive recruiting classes, and you have to continue to build upon that. That's going to be the difference in if Florida State will be able to come back and be that team that it's been, you know, 20 or 10, 15 years ago.
What do you think about those Canes, though? Do you think a death penalty is coming their way?
Absolutely not. You can't control boosters.
Mm-hmm.
You've never been able to control boosters. You've never been able, I mean, the guy didn't work for the school. So how do you hold Coker or some other coach accountable? I think it's just the silliest thing. You know, yes, it's bad, but you got to look at what happened, okay? If, and again, this is allegedly, if whatever happened is true, this is happening all across the country, first of all, because you can't control the boosters. It's happening at Ohio State. It's happening everywhere because you have individuals who love their school and we are willing to do whatever they feel is necessary within their power to help bring athletes or whatever to their school. This happens all the time. No one wants to admit it, but the reality is that there are boosters that are doing things everywhere at every institution in this country.
I know. Well, I'm conflicted on this. I mean, first of all, you know, people love to get up on Mount Pius and say Miami absolutely has to get the death penalty. And I understand where they're coming from, that if they're just, you know, cheating on and leading lives of just absurd.
But I guess my question becomes is what evidence do we have? One person's testimony who's
sure.
in jail.
Mm-hmm.
OK. And truthfully, and I'm not going to say I believe it from the standpoint of gave them an event or Big Wolf. I'm not saying what I'm saying is having been there, it happens everywhere in the country. Where does the university where is the university at fault because they can't control some grown businessman who doesn't work for the university, has no ties in the university with the exception of the fact that whether he went there or just a fan of the school. How do you hold the university accountable for that kind of activity? That's what I don't understand.
I hear you. And listen, there's Sam Gilbert. It goes back to, you know, to the UCLA days. I mean, you know, he's a well-known booster. I guess it's alleged, you know, I won't say that. But John Wooden, who's held up as, you know, the mayor of Mount Pius and, you know, ran a clean program. But Sam Gilbert was, in fact, I won't say in fact, allegedly at least, was sliding all those great players that they had during the UCLA dynasty.
Did he work for the school?
No, he didn't. No, he was a booster.
I'm just making sure. So make sure I
hear
that.
You. No, I agree with you. That's
I get it because, see, some people get this confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to be clear about the lines of distinction. If it's someone who works for the school, there's culpability.
Sure.
Period. End of story. If a coach knows and you can prove that a coach knows and took part of it, the university has culpability. But if you don't have that proof, that beyond a reasonable doubt that the coach, whatever, tangibly was involved in these quote-unquote transactions, in my opinion, you can't hold the schools accountable. And you can't give me this bogus institutional control thing. That's the biggest crock that there is Like, all of a sudden, these coaches and all they're doing is thinking about, hey, you know, I wonder what that booster's doing. Who, hell, what's this booster doing? It's ridiculous.
But can't they see the guy pulling up in a Range Rover or something like that, and it draws a red flag?
How do you prove? In other words, if his parents, mom, dad, whatever, the key point being there is you have to be able to prove, okay, that the young man or young lady, for that matter, you know, is involved. And you have to be able to prove that his parents or whomever or caretakers don't have the wherewithal to provide whatever is being provided. So that's what you look at. And so,
well, I agree, and I think it's a good analogy as steroids in baseball is if a lot of teams, if not everybody, is doing it, if everybody in college football is cheating, I agree with you. How can you possibly hold one team? How can you destroy one program when everybody seems to know that it's going on everywhere? Shouldn't we catch the criminals that we can catch?
But again, I don't draw the parallels with your analogy. I don't follow that analogy from this perspective. We know alumni or boosters are involved in engaging in these activities. The question becomes, how do you hold the university culpable if there are no ties directly to a coach or someone like that doing it? I understand the player. If a player gets caught doing something, you take the player out. You know, you remove the player from the annals. I don't even buy this whole thing. Like, for example, with Reggie Bush and USC, taking the accomplishments of the school away. Reggie did whatever he did. You know, I mean, whether some people believe Pete knew it, but the facts are I can't prove that Pete knew anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can't prove Pete knew anything. So you're telling me you got to punish every single player on that team. All those teams' accomplishments. Because of something some kid did? That, to me, it's just
it's interesting, but like I say, the broad view is, again, I can make an analogy about murder. If we can catch, because we don't catch every murderer, should we not catch the ones we can? Or is the better analogy, it's like, people who smoke marijuana. Like, well, that's not that bad a crime anyway. If boosters are slipping some money to guys who are 19 years old who need the money to get by, is that really that bad
a crime? No, because it's against the quote-unquote rules.
Right.
But you get the people you can get. But you don't punish the university because the university has no idea because they only have like 200,000 alum. You know, and there's a thing called, you know, we know the grades are going down as it is, so their primary responsibility is to work on academics and those kind of things. They're not in the business of policing adults who have their own lives. So where you find these ties to where, and I'm just grabbing Reggie Bush because it's low-hanging fruit, where, okay, you've proved that Reggie Bush did something wrong. And actually, in this particular case, it wasn't even an alumni, it was an agent or something, whatever that was. The point being is you get that guy and you get, quote unquote, the people. But you don't say a lack of institutional control and hammer the University of Southern Cal because of some guy, some individual did something. I just fundamentally have a problem with it. I'm not saying you let anything pass. Be able to prove the ties to the school and the school's lack of taking care of an issue. And there have been instances where the schools have been guilty of, to your point, kid drive up in an Escalade and da-da-da-da-da, and, and he's a scholarship kid, and we know his parents aren't work, or mom didn't work, or something. You know, there are those situations, and then maybe the school needs to be held accountable for it. But I just think that to just willy-nilly just hammer these schools trying to say that they should have just known because you should just know is stupid.
All right, now let's talk NFL football. We're 2 weeks away. And by the way, I have to take a moment, Dukes, and comment on this. You smell divine.
Well,
what's your
scent?
What's your secret?
I can't tell you.
All right, well, it's a secret after all. All right, very good. So let's talk NFL football and talk about Peyton Manning specifically. Big story this week, obviously. Kerry Collins goes over there. First of all, I feel bad for Curtis Painter. What a slap in the face to this guy. Hey, let's get somebody, let's get an old man who's retired. He'll be better than you. He hasn't spent 2 seconds on our offense, but we'd rather go with him than you.
Let me ask you this question. Does anybody in here believe that Kerry Collins isn't a better option than Curtis Painter?
Yeah, no, I agree, but I feel bad for the
Then why are you feeling sorry for the guy? I mean, are you going to feel sorry? Hey, This team, and this is the one thing that kind of has always troubled me about Bill Polian, and you know, and I have to tip my hat to the genius that he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But you've always played that Russian roulette where if Peyton were to go down, it's all going to crash and burn because you had guys like Jim Sorgi as your backup quarterback and Curtis Painter as your backup quarterback. And fortunately for the Colts, that wasn't an issue. But this to me just makes so much sense because look at what the Colts have to work with. Let's just say Peyton isn't ready. Say Peyton comes out. I think he's going to play first game, going to try. He may not be able to finish. So let's say still that happens. You got Reggie Wayne. You got Garcon. You got Dallas Clark. You got Joseph Addai. You got a ton of talent. You just drafted the kid from BC, you know, the big tackle there. You refortified your offensive line.
Costanza.
Yeah. You want to put yourself in a position where you can't win anything just because, for whatever reason, you wouldn't just bring a decent...
I'd say that all the time. It's remarkable
that
the thing people always hold up with Peyton Manning and how irreplaceable he is that's what they always say. Well, if you take him off that team, they'd go 3-13. Yeah, because they've never gotten a capable backup. Right. There are plenty of guys out there that you could have brought in that can get by. Chaz Batch can get by with if Roethlisberger's
going.
You know, there are decent replacements versus guys like Jim Sorgi or Curtis Painter. But what about the fact that Peyton Manning is going, you know, you say you think he's going to play. A lot of people close to him say that he wants, that the most important thing to him is the NFL version of the Lou Gehrig record. What do you think about that? If we assume that he's 70 or 80%, if his motivation is at least on some level.
I don't know who those people are. I don't believe that's the most important. Would he like that record? I believe he would. He wants that Joe Montana record of championships more so than consecutive, you know, trophies and things of that nature. So I mean, while I think he wants it, and certainly you want to do that because you want to continue to play, I'm not convinced that that's kind of the driving force behind it. I think the driving force is how many championships can he rattle off, before he the ship sails off into the sunset.
What do you think about them playing the Houston Texans in week one? Week one in the NFL, obviously, we're all going to be tuned in anyway. Why schedule important divisional games like Steelers and Ravens and like Texans and Colts in week one when as the audience, we're going to watch it anyway? And now the Colts could really be behind the eight ball.
They played them early last year, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yep.
And so what I would say to that is that how important is the game? I mean, it's just the Colts playing. It's not a rivalry. Colts win that division, seems like, 25 years in a row now.
Yeah.
Ever since Peyton's been there. So there's no rivalry there. It just so happens that, because think about it, the team that actually was closest was the Jacksonville Jaguars. So if they were playing the Jaguars, I could see yes in that question. So it's one of those things where that's kind of how the schedule works out before. If I'm Houston, you know, you're relishing the opportunity to catch them early because, think about it, if Peyton, when he's injured, he struggles a little bit. You know, when he had the bursar sac injury, when he had the knee injury, it's going to take him a little while to get used to that fastball again and players breaking on his balls and all that kind of stuff. So to me, it's an opportunity for the Texans to try to steal a couple of wins, so to speak, early on.
I agree.
Get themselves in position where they're ahead of the Colts. Make the Colts have to play catch up. And so shame on, if you ask me, the Houston Texans, who have shown they're already capable of beating the Colts, that you don't win that game. Peyton hadn't been on the field
completely yet. Agree, yes.
And shame on you if you can't find a way to win that game. I just say shame on you.
I see. Stealing my bit here, but the shame. But no, the what about Chris Johnson? If you're Tennessee, what are you doing with him? I say good riddance, but I say... okay. If it's me, I say to Chris Johnson, thank you for the great work, but you're a slightly built guy. The investment that we would have to make in you is going to be too deep, and obviously they're turning the page to a passing-style offense with Jake Locker. Wouldn't they be better served? At some point, they hope that pick is right.
What would make you think that they would be trying to change to a
passing style offense with a guy who completed
54%. It's the way of the NFL. Every team now does it.
I'm not quite convinced that that's what they're thinking when they drafted that guy. That, okay, we're going to turn this thing loose about 42 times a game. I'm not seeing that. Maybe, maybe I got up on the wrong side of the pillow. I don't see Jake Locker under any circumstances, anybody saying, we want him to throw the ball 40 times a game.
Blaine Gabbert,
yeah. Jake Locker, I don't think so. And Gabbert was there.
They passed on Gabbert.
No, I'm saying. But what makes you think that they're saying, how do you draw the tie that because they drafted him, they're going to throw 40 times a game?
Well, either way, the Chris Johnson contract that I assume he's eventually
going to get, just so you understand this,
with you.
There are special players in this league, slight as he might be. Fraction Jackson's a slight player also. But there has not been a more tougher player than Chris Johnson in this league. When you look at the number of games he's played, missed, number of carries that he's had. And so all I would say is if they let him go, it's going to be some tough sledding.
But if you look at the Packers, who obviously win the Super Bowl, and the Patriots, who were the best team in the AFC last year, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and I mean, the Packers ran the ball, I think, three times in the postseason last year.
Excuse me.
It's more important
to
throw the ball.
So now we're saying that either Matty Hasselbeck or Jake Locker is now in the class of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
I think 2011, I'm assuming that this is a so-called rebuilding season no matter what for the Titans.
Right.
I don't think that they are a Super Bowl contender no matter what.
What have you seen out of Jake Locker to make you think that he is remotely close to any
It's what the organization saw in him to spend that first-round pick on him. Obviously, they assume he's their quarterback for the next half dozen years at least.
And we know, with quarterbacks, of all positions, is the one position where you have no idea what you're getting until that guy gets in the chair.
And so you like them, so you would encourage them to do whatever it takes to get Chris Johnson back.
No, I would say that, and what the dilemma that's at play here, is a $12 million deal or more, which they're asking for, which is the franchise caliber, just player deal, and the top running back kind of a deal, where that puts you in that $10 million range. And there's only really two guys we're talking about that are in this stratum, AP and Chris Johnson. That's it. So that's what they've got to come to grips with. The Titans, and I understand this, are not prepared to put up $13, $14, $15 million for a running back. I don't blame them there. But for that guy, I could see a $8 to $10 million equation, and I don't know if they're at that point, as in Chris Johnson's crew is at that point yet.
Dukes, you're a delight. We're going to let you go. Last question for you, though, as a longtime Atlanta Falcon, best Atlanta Falcons uniform.
When we went black with Glanville.
You like those the best?
Oh, yeah.
That's incorrect, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The red hats with the black jerseys are good. I'm open to the red hats, red jerseys.
That's the best.
Gray pants. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's a good
Alfred
one.
Jenkins,
yeah,
Steve Barkowski.
I got that jersey in my office there.
Yeah, you have that one. You wore that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right, of course. Yeah, you were there for that one. Yeah, I think that's a pretty nifty one.
Yeah, the black was, see, you understand, the black was slimming.
I see.
See, there are personal motivations here.
Yes.
But
you're
working guys who look good in anything. You got a great build and all that stuff. You can wear
anything
you want.
That's like me. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm that way. But
Adam, you should appreciate the fact that, see, you got black on today. Exactly. So you should understand these little subtleties.
I get you.
Of wardrobe.
Well, you're looking slim, Dukes, and like I already mentioned, you smell just divine.
Well, thank you.
Oh,
thank
just
you.
Delicious.
I hope
you
didn't lick my neck. That was a bad visual.
And I don't want to, as you go out the door, I don't want to leave on a sour note, but come on, Dukes. You don't have somebody else in fantasy. You don't have another person.
Don't mention that,
because
everybody, you don't mention
don't
that conversation.
That. Eisen brought it up, and he's 100% right. You should be ashamed of yourself.
You know what? Here's like this. You know, unfortunately, you're not as busy as some of the rest of us.
How dare you?
Turn this into a put down of me.
So you can kind of sit around, look at your little team every day, every 5 minutes. And kind of like, some of us have to work for a living. Some of us are in demand, have to do certain things. So I'm sorry that you can just, hey, go check your, look, you're checking your team again. Go ahead. Yeah, nothing changed.
How does this wind up with me feeling small, feeling worse about myself than I already did?
All right,
Dukes. There's the door. No, listen. Thanks very much
My
for coming.
Pleasure, boys.
Hope we can do it again.
Don't be a stranger.
Right,
thanks, Adam. You look great, man.
Thank
keep
you.
The black.
Appreciate it.
Good stuff out of that, Dukes. I like him.
See what I said? The nicest guy.
That's still not right, though, that he's not drafting his own fantasy team. How dare he come on my program and put me down? He can put you down all he wants, but you don't come in here and put me down. But I don't care. He smells so good. It's all right.
Yes.
What is that scent? I got to know.
It's pretty nice.
We
need to sneak into that dressing room over there.
It's terrific. That's a good idea. I don't know. Are we allowed in that wing?
Probably not, but... talk our way in there.
All right. Well, listen, thanks to Jamie Dukes. Good stuff tomorrow coming up. We'll be yapping with our old pal, the Blue Horseshoe from AccuScore, to get the computer's breakdown, Damashek and Rank's breakdown as well of who we're picking right now to win their divisions, make the playoffs, get those wild card spots, all that stuff. It's available for you on iTunes. Again, appreciate you subscribing there. We'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce tomorrow, as a matter of fact. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.